With one hand in her pocket and a piece of bread and jam in the other, Julia wandered about the room, glancing indifferently at the bookcase, pointing out the best way of repairing the gate-leg table, plumping herself down in the ragged armchair to see if it was comfortable, and examining the absurd 12-hour clock with a sort of tolerant amusement. She brought the glass paperweight over to the bed to have a look at it in better light. He took it out of her hand, fascinated as always by the soft, rain-watery appearance of the glass.
"What is it, do you think?" said Julia.
"I don't think it's anything. I mean, I don't think it was ever put to any use.
That's what I like about it.
It's a little chunk of history that they've forgotten to alter. It's a message from 100 years ago, if one knew how to read it.
And that picture over there,"
she nodded at the engraving on the opposite wall,
"would that be 100 years old?"
"More. 200, I dare say. One can't tell. It's impossible to discover the age of anything nowadays." She went over to look at it.
"Here's where that brute stuck his nose out,"
she said, kicking the wainscoting immediately below the picture.
"What is this place? I've seen it before somewhere."
"It's a church, or at least it used to be. St. Clement's Dane, its name was." The fragment of rhyme that Mr. Charrington had taught him came back into his head, and he added, half nostalgically, "Oranges and lemons, say the bells of St. Clement's." To his astonishment, she capped the line.
"You owe me 3 farthings, say the bells of St. Martin's. When will you pay me, say the bells of Old Bailey." I can't remember how it goes on after that. But anyway, I remember it ends up, "Here comes a candle to light you to bed. Here comes a chopper to chop off your head."
It was like the two halves of a countersign. But there must be another line after the bells of Old Bailey. Perhaps it could be dug out of Mr. Charrington's memory, if he were suitably prompted.
"Who taught you that?" he said.
"My grandfather. He used to say it to me when I was a little girl. He was vaporized when I was 8. At any rate, he disappeared.
I wonder what a lemon was," she added inconsequently.
"I've seen oranges. They're a kind of round yellow fruit with a thick skin."
"I can remember lemons," said Winston.
"They were quite common in the '50s. They were so sour that it set your teeth on edge even to smell them."
"I bet that picture's got bugs behind it," said Julia. "I'll take it down and give it a good cleaning some day.
I suppose it's almost time we were leaving. I must start washing this paint off. What a bore. I'll get the lipstick off your face afterwards." Winston did not get up for a few minutes more. The room was darkening. He turned over toward the light and lay gazing into the glass paperweight. The inexhaustibly interesting thing was not the fragment of coral, but the interior of the glass itself. There was such a depth of it, and yet it was almost as transparent as air. It was as though the surface of the glass had been the arch of the sky, enclosing a tiny world with its atmosphere complete. He had the feeling that he could get inside it, and that in fact he was inside it, along with the mahogany bed and the gate-leg table and the clock and the steel engraving and the paperweight itself. The paperweight was the room he was in, and the coral was Julia's life and his own, fixed in a sort of eternity at the heart of the crystal.